Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
And then we're way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
So, I've made this walk up to St James's Park so many times. I came to university here, and now, a few years later, I live here again. And it's pretty remarkable, St James's Park, because it's a huge stadium right in the middle of the city. It's a one-off, it's extraordinary, really. And it just appears out of the middle of the shops and the houses and everything like that. But a huge part of going to the game here, I've never gone directly to the game. You have to go to the pub first, because getting into the pub and talking about the game and sharing that excitement that everyone in the city has right here in the centre of the city is a huge part of it before you even get to the stadium. So for that reason, I'm meeting Emil in the pub before we get in. There is a choice, there is a selection, but we're going right up to St James's Park to have a little chat about the game. Oh, and that's Busking Joe. This is the essence of Newcastle, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
The fact that you come to a pub around the stadium, within stone's throw of the stadium, before it starts, and everywhere is totally packed. And yet, you're within a goal kick of the stadium.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? Every away fan always says that this is the joy of coming to Newcastle, so much so make a weekend of it.
This is Emil Franke. Every home game, he interviews fans around St James's Park for the club's fanzine, True Faith, so he knows the mood around Newcastle as well as anyone else.
I don't think I've ever been to another club that has got, Chelsea aside maybe when I walk through the streets of the day, but that have got a stadium that is about 15 minutes away from the biggest nightclub. That's the best part of it. This has got everything. It's a 15-minute city. It's everything you need. You want to get to the coast, you can drive there in 15 minutes. If you want to get down to the metro centre, it's there in 15 minutes.
All right, tourist board, steady.
Yeah. But look, it's such a special thing of literally being here next to you now and being able to go into the stadium in about 5 minutes. It's just remarkable.
So how is the atmosphere around the place changed since Ashley's gone? Because I know, like, people have talked specifically about one side of the takeover, the Saudis coming in. But from living in the city, you know, the main bit is about Ashley going and about that slow death of nearly 15 years being over. I mean, even when, let's be frank, the team was still crap before Christmas, that atmosphere was totally different, wasn't it? I'm not sure if people outside the city really got that.
Yeah, that same team played Tottenham the other day. I don't know if you noticed. It was the ghost of Brucey Past came back to haunt us. I mean, the match is now an event again. I mean, it was always an event, but now it is almost like you make an actual effort to make a day of the game. There's a group of friends I know who, you know, win, lose, or draw, we are meeting up after the game regardless. We'll meet up before the game because we want to make a day of it. It feels like you almost have to say to yourself, whatever plans I've got tomorrow, I might have to put them on standby because I don't know how I'm going to be feeling the next day. And that didn't used to happen. Before, it was a case of saying, like, oh God, like, what's the next game going to be like?
It's like obligation.
Yeah. It was like, okay, well, I've got a ticket, I might as well go. It's something to do, isn't it? But now, it's the hottest ticket in town. You've got everyone asking for spares, myself included, because I stupidly didn't get, well, maybe wisely didn't get a season ticket back when the last regime was there. But it is, it's a day out now, it's a full day out, it might even be 2 days out. It's a real special experience. Even when Newcastle are on the TV, everyone's like, oh, what are you doing for the game? I'm like, oh, I really wish I wasn't busy because I want to be spending time with you before the game. It's a real thing, and people are getting to the ground earlier. Like the Tottenham game when the takeover had just happened, people were in 2 hours before kickoff. Not as much now, but like everyone wants to see the flags again, everyone wants to soak up that atmosphere. I took my mum to her first game the last time we were at home about a month ago. And that was a real special experience because although she's not a football fan, because of the stuff that I do outside of the ground and things like that, she's almost become a Newcastle fan more by proxy. I mean, my granddad, he was a Newcastle fan anyway, but I think that she's become more involved as of that. And, you know, my enjoyment of the game meant that she watches at home and goes, oh, well, he'll be in a good mood, won't he, if they win today. So taking her along to that first game, she was like, I appreciate now the feeling of the fans. And, she got swept up in it a little bit of seeing, like, all of the fans being upstanding before the game. It just felt really good. It feels good to be a Newcastle fan at the minute.
So are you getting that same thing off the fans that you speak to? Because when you do the True Faith cam afterwards and you go out and speak to people, how has that changed? How has the reaction of other people changed? I mean, there's always a warmth about this city, I don't think there's any doubt about that. But now there's an optimism, and it's not a we're going to win the Premier League next season kind of optimism. It's just a sense of everyone pulling in the same sort of direction.
Well, everyone went mad when they cleaned the windows. I don't know if you saw that there was news reports, there was videos, there was everything going on when they cleaned the stadium. Today's the first day with the Shearer's Bar signs back. We're going to be filming outside of there after the game. I'm really excited because I get to be like, oh, we're at Shearer's for the first time ever doing this. Fans are just excited anyway. I mean, they're still as drunk as they always were, and you'll get the occasional Raji who walks by who doesn't know where he is but likes the sight of a camera and will shout anything at you. Mentioning the Tottenham game again, although we lost that game, there was still a bit of a renewed optimism. People were like, we'll be alright, you know, like, don't worry about it. And it's been quite amazing to, contrasting it with how we started the season to when we're on now, since we've had those wins and being able to talk about wins, it's just, it's miles different. The Brighton game in particular was one where, a game where no one expected to win it. And I think that people coming out of that were just like, I mean, me included, I got a bit carried away that day and thought to myself, this is great, this is incredible. There's just such a good buzz. Even talking to you now before we go in, I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, yeah, easy. Wolves will be a pushover. Edit this if we lose. Wolves are going to be a very tough ask. But yeah, it's I really can't put it into words just what it's like. You have to have seen and lived through some of the actual bad times to really understand it, which is why I don't think any other fan unless you've been in that position, say Man City, who've gone from polar opposites entirely of Division 3 to a mass takeover and winning the league.
But it's not just about the money, is it?
No.
It's not just about the results. I think that's the thing.
It's just the engagement with the fans. It's communication. Yeah. It's every single thing. Even today, we saw an interview with Alan Shearer. Probably the first interview with Alan Shearer sat in the Newcastle dressing room well over 10 years, surely. Probably his first time in that dressing room since he was manager, I would say anyway. But like the club sitting down with Alan Shearer, Les Ferdinand, getting people like Warren Barton back in and actually cherishing that and actually respecting what was once, rather than, you know, just like looking at it and going, nah, you know what, we don't need to get them on. Fans won't be bothered. Doing the bare minimum to just tick along, if I'm to quote our last manager. Now it's like we're actually engaging with the fans and using them and, you know, celebrating war flags each day. I believe today that the owners have actually got flags on their seats. So that'll be huge. Everything's an opportunity to just get back to this club where the fans are the core. And that's all, what it always should have been. It should never have been that we were frozen out like we were. It feels like we're being listened to. It feels like we're actually being taken into account, and that's really all we ever wanted. And it just so happens that the manager and the players are starting to do their thing as well. So long roll on everything else.
To the other side of it, because there's been a lot of talk about the owners. It took ages to get through the Premier League. I mean, it's difficult, isn't it? Because
it
I guess, how have you and your friends discussed it? Has it been something that's been ideologically difficult for some of your friends that support Newcastle? And how do you feel about it?
Yeah, I'm sounding like a broken record for the amount of things that I say about it, but I guess with everyone else, it's like this isn't the question to land at a football fan's door. I mean, I go to the match to watch 11 blokes kick a ball around and see Eddie Howe use his tactics. I don't really go to try and have some sort of battle in myself to have a worry about what's going on elsewhere, and I guess that's this whole thing in action. But then again, you know, these issues obviously are now at our doorstep. Were many fans thinking about it before the takeover? Probably not. Are many thinking about it now? I'll be brutally honest, I don't think many people are bothered about what's going on. Yeah, okay, the Chelsea issue has brought more of this to light, and I guess that it's an uncomfortable light for Newcastle fans, because I think as Luke of your parish has said, you know, we're the next one. You know, as soon as Saudi Arabia fall out of favour with the UK government, we're next, unfortunately. You have to hope that that doesn't happen, in a way. But equally, you know, if it does happen, then rightfully so. Throughout the entire thing, I've maintained that the best thing to do is just be aware of it. Don't hold a Saudi flag up. Don't wear headdresses. Don't make a fool of yourself. Sadly, there's still a few who do. I think it's dying down now. We've seen Saudi flags replaced with Brazil flags because of our Lord and Saviour Joe Linton coming into his own.
It's only right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he deserves all the credit he can get after changing his ways, which is still baffling. That's the biggest part of the takeover, and the money doesn't even come into it. Always be mindful is always what I'll say to Newcastle fans, but I would challenge any other fan who pokes at it and saying like, oh, it's all blood money. If any other team, bar the top six who haven't had this already, had this sort of money coming in, what would you do? would you say, I'm not going to go and watch my team suddenly become the richest club in the world? Like, I'm not going to set my back.
That's the thing, isn't it? Like, what you think ideologically and what you feel when you go in the stadium, it's actually quite difficult to balance, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's like, I've mentioned this already, that do I expect any of the players to not work for this ownership? You know, are they going to sit down and go, nah, you know, right, I'm not playing because I disagree with it?
They'd be the first football players ever to do that.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, Dan Byrne, imagine him just like saying, no thanks. They wouldn't last a second at the club. Same as Eddie Howe being asked these questions. If he said anything critical, he knows that he's at risk, because you can't be seen to be doing that. In the same way that Pep Guardiola probably bats down questions about anything to do with Abu Dhabi, and the way that I guess journalists are batting down questions now about going to Qatar and taking that money, saying, oh, it's our job. I guess for a football fan, although we're not paid to do it, we get a certain...
It's not really a choice, is it?
No, exactly.
Once you're past a certain point.
I want to go and see Newcastle win today more than anything, because it gives me my setup for the week. You know, that there's a certain level of serotonin that comes from seeing Newcastle win today, and that does determine whether or not your entire week or weekend's going to be good. I mean, we're here on a Friday night. If Newcastle lose tonight, I'm going to have a pretty bad weekend. I'm honest, you know, I'll forget about it, but there will be an element of me that thinks, oh, that's a shame, that. Oh, damn. Really bad way to start the weekend. If we win tonight, Newcastle bars everywhere around us is going to make a killing. And that's massive for the city, because it's what the city relies on. Tourist board again, by the way. Some MP will be listening going, yeah, great. But no, it's part of the weekend, and I know that sounds very cliched. It's like the, you know, got to get out of the house. Some blokes don't do anything else. They go to work, go to the match, go home again. It's really difficult to tear yourself away from a football club that you have followed for this long. And I mean, through thick and thin, some fans will say that you're not even experienced half of it. I mean, like Wimbledon, for example, Andy, you're like, you know. Like,
but that's the thing with any discussion of whether it be
relative,
money,
yeah,
or problems or whatever else. I think whataboutery is like, yeah, completely useless, isn't
know,
it? Really, it's not like our misery is worse than your misery,
no,
or whatever.
Exactly.
I mean, it's that was the thing with Newcastle under Ashley. It was a very particular sort of misery that was very difficult to explain to people outside the city,
yeah,
because people would say, "Well, you're in the Premier League most of the time. You know, it's fine." But the complete absence of hope. I guess what this has proved, the new owners coming in, is that it sounds very simple, but hope is important,
isn't it?
That's
the key word. Hope has replaced desperation. It's the fact that we lost 5-1 last time out. 2 days later, you're thinking, oh well.
Yeah.
Okay, well, it's all right, because we've got everyone back at the ground. Everyone's in this together. Whatever Eddie Howe chooses to do today, we'll back it. The players put their all into it, we'll back it. The owners will be there, cool. And if we don't win against Wolves, then we go again against next Sunday. Whereas if you won 3-0 under Ashley, you'd be thinking, oh God, this won't last. You know, this isn't going to last. You know,
a blind squirrel finds a nut, etc.
That's it, exactly. And it was, you know, like as summer approached, Newcastle had a knack in the last few seasons from Benitez to Bruce to really hit form towards the end of the season. And you thought to yourself, oh, this is great. Imagine if it was like this all the time. But you knew the summer was coming. You knew that no investment was coming. And already you were thinking, well, if we don't improve on this, we're doomed next season. And every single time, the fans were proved right. And I think that was more apparent than ever at the start of this season when we went on that. Well, we didn't even win a game until a few games into Eddie Howe's management. This season would have been such a disaster if the takeover hadn't happened when it had done. If we'd had to go through the arbitration proceedings this January, Steve Bruce would have still have been in charge then,
yeah.
And even then the arbitration wouldn't have been the start of it. We would have had to wait until maybe even March for a takeover to happen. By that point we would have been down, because I didn't see anything changing this season. The luck had run out, the ideas had run out and Ashley wasn't the type of manager that would listen to fans. I spoke about this the other day, saying that in that Tottenham game when Bruce was still in charge, we happened to have a moment there where the fans decided, right, the owners are here, we're losing 3-2, we're going to lose this anyway, now's the time to make our voice heard. And I think that was the bit where the fans clicked and went, these new owners, they're going to listen, so let's give Bruce hell, like, let's make our voice heard, because for so many years we weren't being listened to. Dismay over Bruce was there from the season he came in. We didn't even want him there, really. Yeah. Some gave him a chance, me included, and I thought, right, okay, we'll see how he does. But very quickly it became apparent that this isn't the manager to take us forward, and it didn't matter what you said, nothing was going to change it. No matter what you said in the ground, no matter how many times you made yourself heard, Ashley is not a reactionary person. He just go, yeah, be fine, because we'll do it, we'll make our own luck, as he said in that interview. And each time we never changed. It was just so frustrating.
It's funny actually, because a friend of mine who was a business writer, he knew Mike Ashley quite well, or knew his business quite well, when he took over Newcastle. And obviously when he came in, he initially ingratiated himself with Newcastle fans. He was drinking pints in the away end and all this sort of stuff.
Downing.
He was.
He's necking.
Yeah. Not drinking is to understate. Sorry, Mike, if you're listening.
Power drinking is the term that he would use. Power drinker.
He probably would. But I think my friend said to me, he said, what you need to understand is he doesn't care about anyone else's opinion. And you know what? He couldn't have fulfilled that role more faithfully. Yeah. Could he really?
Yeah, well, the only time I think he ever did it, and he did it abysmally, and look, I don't want to besmirch King Kev's name on the ramble, of course, because I'll probably end up he'll probably come around and drop some wine bottles outside of my house. But chances are, like, that decision when he brought Keegan in was potentially, well, and Shearer that season, for example, that was when Ashley seemed to, I don't know, like, it almost felt like he lost the plot a bit. It was like, oh god, quick, right, get Keegan, right, okay, that didn't work, right, quick, get joking here, god, god, Jesus, and then Shearer, and it was like, who's next, like, and then Deck, like, and probably Robson Green as like an assistant manager. It was like that weird season where the wheels firmly came off, and Keegan had been slung out and thrown under the bus, and then relegation happened. It was like, oh god, like, all of those false dawns at the start when he took over became apparent. And not long after that, I think Benitez is the perfect example of being like, right, there's a manager who's really doing well for the club. The only problem was that he spoke out that many times against Ashley, and that's why the fans got so behind Benitez. It wasn't because of the playing style, it wasn't the fact that he knew how to do it, it was the fact that he told it how it was.
Yeah.
Like, we need investment. The owner's not doing it, so I hope that we're going to get some investment. And sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. More often than not, it didn't. It was just a shocking turn of events. So much so that I know some people who were like, oh, well, Benitez wanted too much to stay. And it was like, no. He would have stayed if it weren't for that. And I think that was the start of something special. And contrastingly now, we've got the ownership who trust in a manager who can do that. And I think that's it. It's like, what does Eddie Howe need? He needs new players in January, right? We'll go and get some. And it happened. There we go. I think it was after the the Cambridge game. The Cambridge game when we lost in the FA Cup. It was like, what we needed to do was a striker. Right, go and get a striker. Chris Wood comes in. Bang. Done. That was like the reaction that we needed. And I think we only ever had that one January under Ashley. It was so inconsistent. It was just so... never learned from the mistakes, and it was almost unbelievable. Like, you'd think, like, you know, oh, I left the tap running, the house is flooded, I best not do that again. Go out again and say, I'm just going to leave that tap on, see what happens, it'll be alright, I'll be back in time. Oh no, it's flooded again. That was it was over and over again, not learning from the same mistakes. Like, finishing fifth one year and then reinforcing your team with Vernon and Anita, that is not the way to go into like the new season. So annoying, just so annoying.
So I guess finishing with a flush of optimism.
Yeah.
After the inevitable victory
later. So sad to talk about Ashley, by the way, Andy.
Yeah, we'll get away from that. After the inevitable victory later, or you know what? Even if it's not a victory, the pubs will still be full afterwards. There's no doubt about that. This city is unique, as we were saying. I think certainly within England, in terms of it being central geographically, it's also central to the life of the city. What is it about Newcastle that makes it so? It's not just the geography, is it?
It's the people. It's the people. I've been lucky enough, because I'm not from Newcastle, but it has always felt like home. Came to uni here, moved up here for then. And part of that was because, not because I knew the actual city itself, it was because I knew that I'd feel safe. I knew that I could walk along a street and like ask someone anything and like have a chat. And it helps being from around here, like from County Durham. But like, I don't know, there's just something about it. Going back to Cambridge, I know their fans were very complimentary of us when they came. They were like, oh, thank you for making us feel so welcome.
Yeah.
And it was always going to be like that. It's every fan. You know, there's a reason that in Newcastle there is not an away fans bar. Yeah. Like, everywhere you go, if you're on the road, when I've been down to London, it's like, oh, no away fans. Where are you going before the game? Oh, we're going to go to this pub because that's where everyone has to go. Or in the case of Stoke-on-Trent, you have to go to a five-a-side pitch, which still baffles me to this day when I live down
right?
there. Oh, yeah. Honestly, I think it's a harvester or a five-a-side pitch. And I think the last time Newcastle fans were down there, they actually joined in on one of the five-a-sides games. So, it's baffling. But, no away fan pubs. Like, you'll find, I think we've just seen a couple of Wolves fans come in before, actually, in this pub.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's nowhere like it, and people Sunderland fans will hate this, but it is a bit different. I mean, Sunderland's probably the same. If you went to Sunderland, you wouldn't get the reception of feeling like an outsider. I think everyone's welcome. It's the northeast. We are very much an inclusive area where we are happy just to chat away. You know, we'll chat to this person, chat to that person. Oh, what did you think of the game? Oh, I didn't mind that. All right, see you later. Oh, do you want a pint? Newcastle is nightlife, and it thrives off it. And the fact that when you're here on a match night and you see the lights when you're driving in, if you're in the city, you can still see that little glow, even if you're as far out as where I live in Gateshead. There's like little slight lightness to the sky, and you're like, oh, it's match night tonight, and it's like, it's so good, like hearing it, seeing it. I can't quite put it into words, and I'm sure Pete can back me up in saying that there is just something special about having a stadium next door to everything that's going on. It's the best city in the world. Have I said enough about the city? give me a job on the council, please.
Number one, Martin Dubravka. Number five, Fabian Scher. Number seven, Joe Linton. Number eight, and captain, John Joe Shelby. Number 10, Alan Saint-Maximin. Number 13, Matt Target. Number 17, Emil Kraft. Number 20, Chris Wood. Number 21, Ryan Fraser. Number 33, Dan Byrne. And number 39, Bruno Guimaraes. On the bench for Newcastle tonight.
To play the greatest was on the 9th of June, 1862 on a summer's afternoon. We took the bus from Bambers and she was Chevy Lane. Where we went along Bombard Street, that's on the road to play.
Thank you.
Almer on over the top. There have been a few little like half chances for Newcastle so far. Trying to build some momentum, but that's super difficult against Wolves. It's been quite bitty, quite stop-start in the first 20 minutes. But the crowd are trying to pick them up, for sure. Super build-up, scruffy finish. I think they just about deserve that.
The first goal in the game to Newcastle. The scorer at the 20, Chris Wood.
Right, they're checking it.
The VAR decision awaited. Possible offside.
Yeah, that cheer from the top. You can hear it's offside. We're still goalless.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think, like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Thank you. So Wolves have had an on-target-ish shot from Hwang for the first time. 55 minutes. Sher could have headed it out of play, but in trying to keep it in, he set up a Wolves counter-attack. Starting the second half a lot better. Well, I didn't show any attacking intent in the first half whatsoever. Face a goal though. Wolves actually look interested in trying to score a goal now, which is why you're getting this counter reaction from the crowd. So Maximon doing the difficult bit, a little dribble and then overcooking the pass out of play. Not nearly but not quite from Newcastle. Enough to keep the fans interested. But just not quite enough to get the nose in front. Oh, that was a great chance for St Maximin. Great ball in by Guimaraes. Loads of space, could have stopped it. Had a big swipe at it first time, and over the top. Oh, but the crowd loving Bruno Guimaraes, an absolute dreamboat of a footballer. Like Chris Wood on pens.
VAR decision awaited. Checking penalties.
Surely this time. Look like Jose Sa got a decent piece of Chris Wood there. It is a penalty. That is deserved. Even if Wolves have come out to play a little bit more in the second half, I think we've struggled to argue. And Newcastle didn't deserve that.
The first goal of the game to Newcastle, and definitely this time, and the scorer number 20, Chris Wood.
Another break. Oh, Bruno Guimaraes is missed by a whisker. It's a corner, so I guess it must have taken a little nick. They should have had that. So there's just been a brief stoppage. A few players have had a quick drink. And Dan Byrne, from fully the centre of the pitch, has launched his bottle straight back off the field. He's got an absolute rocket of a run.
Number 5, Marcel coming off, replaced by number 3, Ryan Ednori.
Good save from Dubravka, that. He must be chilly. He's not had much to do. Nice sharp little low save from... Fabio Silva.
Indicated a minimum of 4 minutes stoppage time to be added. 4 minutes.
It's interesting, given that Steve Bruce was often criticised when he was here for not being active enough in the touchline. It's like Newcastle have got two managers now, because Eddie Howe is there doing it all on the touchline, but so is Jason Tindall. I don't know if it's in my mind because, of course, for Howe's first game, he had COVID, so he wasn't here, and it was Tindall who was leading it with some phone messages from Eddie Howe. So Maximan's off again. He needs his reward. He needs his reward. Come on. Oh, great run straight at the keeper. Oh. Alan, what are you doing to us? Bruno Lage is going absolutely apeshit at his team. Dubravka's taken a long time to get up after catching that cross. It looks like he's got cramp. I'm not sure I've seen that for a while. A goalkeeper with cramp. All about eating up the time at this point. Go 3 points back into the town, and Joe's still here.
Ramble Presents is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit. And he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we'll weigh around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.